Tuesday the 24th of June, Kof Aleph Sivan, Rabbi Tzvi Belovsky, Korach Yichus.
Good morning. It's about 3 months since I last spoke here. I assume that the gap was due to the controversial nature of my previous offering about the Israelites. I'm assuming on this occasion that I don't need to be controversial every time, and if I'm not controversial, then you probably won't be back for another 3 months. So I want to look at the issue of Korach's Yichus, and this time I'm going to make sure the content is the same as the title, which is not one of my specialities. But what the issue of Korach's Yichus is something with which we're all familiar, but I think is not always properly understood. The parasha begins, as you know, by Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi. It identifies Korach, it goes back 3 further generations, ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi. And we are introduced to his rebellion, who his friends are, Dothan, Aviron, Oin ben Peles. And Vayikoalu, a pasuk later, Al Moshe Aaron, they gather over Moshe and Aaron, and they make the following statement: "Vayomeru alihem rablochem." It's too much for you. This is a claim that you've taken too much leadership for yourself. What we would call in English nepotism. For those who are writing down the big words, yicholu eidor kulam kadoshim. All of the people are holy. Uvstrichom Hashem, God is in their midst. Umadua tis nasa'u al kal Hashem. So why do you appoint yourself leaders over the community of God? Now, there are various midrashim which attempt to pick apart Korach's motivation. That's what we're going to discuss. And we're going to use an understanding of his motivation to deal with the issue of the unnecessary genealogy, the Yichus, at the beginning of the parasha. So there are various midrashim, a classic one which Rashi paraphrases in Midrash Rabbah in the Parasha Yud Ches, when he is annoyed with the appointment of Elitzophon, his cousin, as the tribal leader. He thinks that he should get the job, and he looks at the various Yichus, he looks at the family members, and he determines that he believes that he really should have been given the job, and it's not right that his cousin should have got the position. And this leads into a whole cascade of complaints, where Korach really believes that he should be the leader. He thinks that Moshe shouldn't have appointed Aaron as the Kohen. He thinks that's nepotism. Why is he giving his brother the good job? And really what it comes down to is he thinks that he should be the leader instead of Moshe. And we are aware that the issue of his name at the beginning is addressed by Chazal, because genealogies are intended to convey information. It is axiomatic that every word of the Torah is needed. We don't need to know anything. Perhaps we need to be told it's Ben Yitzhar, in case we should think there's another Korach, although you could have got that information from somewhere else in the Torah as well. We certainly don't need to know that Yitzhar is the son of Kohos, who in turn is the son of Levi. That information, in terms of this, the narrative, is redundant. Now, this is compounded by the fact that there is an even longer genealogy in Divrei Hayomim, and this is what Rashi refers to, based on Tanchum at the beginning of the Parsha. So, in a long list of those who are Oymed al Haduchan in Divrei Hayomim, the Elo Ha'Oymed Muvnehem, Mivnei HaKohosi, Haymon HaMashoira, these are the people who stood, these were the descendants of the Kohosites from the family of Kohos. Haman the singer, Ben Yoel, Ben Shmuel, then a whole long list of the family. Ben Tachas, Ben Asir, Ben Aviosov, Ben Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kohos, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. And we know from the story, Uvnei Korach Lumesu, that Korach's children survived the rebellion, and so we're not surprised to discover that Korach's son is back in the story, Aviosov. Who's Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kos, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. So the genealogy in the Divrei Hayomim is taken right back to Yaakov. The Tanchuma, which Rashi paraphrases, is based on Yaakov's brachas. Why would it be, if for some reason or other, to this still be discussed, We need a lengthy genealogy of Korach to understand who he is, where he's coming from. Why is it that the genealogy stops at Levi? This is a very familiar Rashi, but I'll read you the original, the Tanchuma, from which Rashi got his comment. Ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi, v'lom alok siv ben Yaakov, o ben Yisrael. Why does the genealogy not take it back as Yaakov? It says Yisrael, of course, as a suggestion, because that's the Nusach, that's the text of Divrei Hayomim. So, it talks about the brachas. The brachas that Yaakov gave to his sons on his deathbed towards the end of Sefer Bereishis. Shimon v'Levi Achim, Shimon and Levi are brothers, referring to their partnership in the destruction of Shechem. Kelei Chomos Mecheroseihem, their approach is to use weapons of destruction, of violence. So as a result of that, he makes a declaration which seems not to be a bracha, but more a statement about himself. B'soidom al tovoi nafshi, let my soul not come into their plan. B'kolom al teichad kavoidi, let my name not be unified with their congregation, and so on. Kiva apom horguish, because they killed a man, that's a reference to Shechem, in their anger, ubrit soyomik rushor, which is a reference to Yosef. So based on this brocha, the Medrash answers the question, why doesn't the Yichus here go back as far as Yaakov? It quotes the posuk, b'sodom al tovoi nafshi, elu maragim b'kolom al teichol kavoidi, the second phrase, ubi kolom, and in their community, refers to the kahal of Korach. Let my name, says Yaakov, not be associated, might be a better translation. Let my name not be associated with their congregation. I see, says Yaakov, in the distance, in the future, a rebellion which is started by one of my descendants, and I don't want to be associated with it. Omer Yaakov was Nakurish Baruch Hu. Yaakov says to God, Rebbeinu Shaloilom, Leben Maraglim, I don't want my name to be mentioned either with the episode of the spies nor with the rebellion of Korach. With those wicked people in the future who will cause anger. They must say so, then the Medrash acknowledges, but there is a time when my name will be mentioned. Means there's a Hava Mina. What is the Hava Amina of the Medrash? Because elsewhere, Yaakov's name is mentioned in the genealogy, and then it quotes the Pasuk from Divrei Hayomim. Just in case you thought I knew the Pasuk from Divrei Hayomim, I got it from the Medrash. Now, there are many problems with this Medrash. Two questions I asked my oldest daughter last night, what she thought of this Medrash. We presume she knows from school. And she said, yes, well, of course, there are two problems. First of all, well, Yaakov's name is mentioned in the genealogy somewhere else. And the second thing is, let's assume that Yaakov's name would not be mentioned. And we don't know that David's ben Yaakov. It's not Chiddush, I mean, we knew this already. We know whether it's written or not. We know they could just say Vayikach Korach and not mention anything. We know Korach as ben Yitzhar. We can find that elsewhere. We know that Yaakov, so who are we kidding? Who is Yaakov kidding? Like, we don't know that Levi's his son? How did it help Yaakov? What did the Medrash really mean? This is an obvious question. I'm not the first person to ask this question. I think to answer the question, one needs to look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin in Kuf Tes on base, without asking this question, is really giving a methodology for understanding redundant genealogies. There are plenty of genealogies in the Torah which are, in terms of the narrative, one might say, redundant. They're not needed in terms of the story. We know who the people are, we know his fathers, we know his grandfathers, we don't need this information. And if it's provided, it cannot be provided for genealogical purposes. So what is it provided for? So here's a clue. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Vayikach Korach, Omer Resh Lakish. Resh Lakish says, Shalokach mekach rola atzmoi. He took a bad taking for himself. He took something bad. Of course, that's a reference to the absence of an object. Vayikach Korach, Korach took, has a subject, Korach, and he has a verb, took, but he has no object. And the word the verb to take. You take something, and of course that's subject to many interpretations. I'm interested in the next bit. Korach, Shana said, Korcho b'Yisrael. Each name is read not just as a name, but as a concept. Korach means bald. He made a bald spot in the Jewish people, meaning there was a space where they used to be, because suddenly they all disappeared and now there's a space. That's what the Gemara means. Ben Yitzhar, what does Ben Yitzhar mean? Apart from it means his father was called Yitzhar. Ben Shasir Cholov Eskola Oilon Gitzar, he made the whole world burn against him like the midday sun. He caused anger. Ben Kahos, Ben Shikoshine Molidov, a person, a son, Kahos is he blunted the teeth of those who brought him into the world, like Hake Shinov from the Haggadah. Ben Levi, Ben Shinase Levaya, the Gehinnom. He had a nice accompaniment into Gehinnom. So what's the story here? And then the Gemara goes on to say the same as the Medrash Tanchuma. Why isn't Yaakov mentioned? What, and so on. This Gemara is a clue to properly understanding this text and other similar texts. The Gemara's underlying question is that the genealogy is unnecessary for the narrative, and therefore it's not telling us who his relatives are, it's telling us what type of person he was. It's not a biological genealogy, it is a Midas genealogy. It is describing aspects of Korach's personality, who he was, what type of person he was. And for that, to understand the story properly, to understand the Korach story, we need to know who he was, not biologically, but conceptually. That's what this Gemara is doing. It's telling us that Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar, ben Yitzhar is not just his father, it's telling us about his midas, what type of person he was. It's telling us what he could have been, what sort of traits, characteristics, midas he inherited, and what he did with them. It's telling us vital aspects. If you want to understand the Korach story properly, who are we dealing with? And this really should be a methodology for all other similar texts where we seem to have names of people that are not really necessary. He's a ben of so-and-so. It doesn't mean he's a biological son. It means he is the inheritor of a certain attribute, a certain way of being. He achieves certain things and fails to achieve other things. We're learning about him rather than who he is, and so on. And if you look at the Rashi on the Gemara, which is my next source, it discusses the what these attributes mean, but I've translated the Gemara for you in accordance with Rashi. So that theme should be the springboard for properly understanding this source. We know all sorts of bits of information about him, but he's not called Ben Yaakov or Ben Yisrael here. The simple understanding of that would mean that whatever he inherits, whatever he gets, it does not come from Yaakov. Now that sounds very appealing, and what the Medrash is really saying is that the midas that he inherits start at Levi. It starts at Levi. And that's why Yaakov isn't mentioned. And what Yaakov is really saying is that, well, those attributes that result in his rebellion, Kodesh Baruch Hu, let them not be anything to do with me. That's a lovely explanation, but it's problematic, as we'll see in a minute. What does the Maharal have to say? The Maharal is always a very good place to begin a proper study of this sort of thing. And he asked the question, "V'aloi ein tzorich lichto ben Yaakov." First of all, he doesn't need to write ben Yaakov, because it only usually asks really a third question. It only really is miyachis someone, only attributes their family back to the shevet, to the tribe. So what was the Havamina? Of course, the Havamina is stated in the Medrash. The Havamina, well, that's very nice, but you can see somewhere else it does mention Yaakov and Yisrael. And he quotes a Mizrahi. In fact, one of his main jobs in the Gurarie is to quote the Mizrahi and then disagree with him. That's one of his favourite jobs. The Mizrahi says this, but it's difficult to his Rashi, but I don't like that reading. I want to say something different. The Nira Li, says the Maharal, having rejected the Mizrahi. He is not telling, and this is what I just said to you, the verse is not telling you that Korach is the son of so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, because we know this already. We know that he's a son, a member of the Levian. Diksiv, Uvnei Yitzhar, Korach, Beneset, Vezichri. We have a pasuk already that tells you who he is. They are Korach, Korach, Osul, Ashmu, Enon. Ma'alosom. This genealogy is to tell you their milers, who they are, what kind of attributes, exactly as I just said, this methodology is not my own, it comes, as you can see, from the Maharal. Shei Migadoylin, Umichashuvin. It's to make sure you understand they come from very important people. And it says the same thing with the 250 Nochschleppers, his band of people. It mentions, it calls them Nisiei Edol, Kriyei Moed and Sheshem. They are people of renown, noblemen, people of importance. But Kibun de Krolle also Rakla Sapech Hashivusum Malusum. Since the Pasuk is only not, it's coming to tell you not their biological genealogy, but to tell you how important they were, what sort of midas they had. Hayagam came Yachas of Yaakov, then the Pasuk should certainly have mentioned Yaakov, because Yaakov is the most important of the lot. And that's really the question. Why isn't Yaakov mentioned if we're trying to tell you what great midas he inherited and therefore what went so badly wrong? Well, it would have been better still to tell it to Yaakov. If you really want to condemn Korach based on what he inherited, it would be better still to tell you Yaakov. Because that's the real meaning of the Maharal of the question. But even though we know that, we will know anyway that Korach comes from an important family, nonetheless it would really emphasize it by mentioning Yaakov. And therefore, what are we going to do with this? Yaakov realized that if you really want to condemn his descendant, his great-great-grandson Korach, it would make good sense to mention Yaakov. Then he governs for mercy for himself, Kodesh Baruch Hu. Please let him not be associated with this, even though when it comes to mention Korach in a parav context, in the list of genealogies, together with all the other families in Divrei Yomim, of course it will go right back to me. When it comes to talk about the midas that he inherits, for which he is then criticized for making a rebellion, don't mention me. That's the Maharal's reading of the story. So, it's a little difficult. It's difficult because, so what we say, the midas that he inherits only come from Levi. So where did Levi get them from? Well, they just came out of the air. They come from Yaakov anyway. And so it doesn't seem still to fit properly together. We understand the Maharal gives a mature and much more rounded reading of the Medrash. What was Yaakov's Havamina? What is going on in Divrei Yomim? The difference, one is showing what kind of person Korach was and therefore how terrible his rebellion was. That's our story here. The story in Divrei Yomim is just giving lists of names. Yaakov doesn't mind being mentioned there. Bikesh Rachamim. He asks for mercy. I don't want it to be recorded for posterity that anything associated with me could be imagined to be involved in the Korach rebellion. But it doesn't help, because we know that whatever Levi was the son of Yaakov. So how do we ask the problem? So to understand that, we need to look at a peculiar passage a bit later in the Parsha. If you've been following the story of the Mishkan till now, you'll have seen that the Mizbeach was effectively a set of hollow boards, and when they encamped, they filled it with earth and they brought the Korbanos on top of the earth. Until now, what has happened? Moshe challenges Korach. In the morning, God will make known who is his, i.e. who is the rightful leader appointed by God. So what should you do? Zois asu kachulach and machtois karavacholad osoi. Every member of Korach's rebellion, his band, should take a fire pan made of nechoshes. Usnuvahem eish, place fire in them. That means glowing coals. Vesimo alehem katoires, and place katoires upon the glowing coals. Lifnei Hashem mochor, before God tomorrow. And the one that God will choose, he is the Holy One. Rav lochem b'nei Levi, which means in a modern idiom, you've bitten off more than you can chew, Levites. Something like that. So we know what happens. It ends in disaster. What do they do with the fire pans in Perek Yud Zayin? Kodesh Baruch again speaks to Moshe, Emoel Elozer ben Aharon HaKohen. Speak to Elozer ben Aharon HaKohen. V'yorenes HaMachzos ben HaSreifo, and he should retrieve the fire pans from the conflagration. V'eso esh zrei holo ki kodeshu. Throw out the fire. They have been sanctified. Esh Machzos HaKato imo Eileh b'nafshe som. These fire pans, who belong to those people who sin, literally till their death, take them. Make them into plates which will be beaten out for the Mizbeach, to cover the altar. Because they were have been brought forward before God and sanctified. And they should be a sign for the Jewish people. Then he did it, and he continued. He took these machtois hanchoshes, these copper fire pans, which those who had been burnt had brought forward and beat them into plates, zikoroin livnei Israel, as an eternal reminder to the Jewish people, asher leikrav is zor, asher leimizaharin, that an alien person who is not a descendant of an Aaron may not bring korbanos in this way. That's what happens, and you should not be like Korach. They will look at it and remember. They should not be like Korach, nor make a rebellion. That's the story. These people are sinners. They are destroyed, they die, and you have the fire pan left, but they've been annihilated. And Kodesh Baruch Hu says, take the fire pans and use it to cover them as death. It's very, very odd. Very odd. We would assume they'd be destroyed, burned, buried, associated with something completely alien and be rejected, but they're not rejected. The key verse is the Orenes Amachtois in Ben Asrefo, Veso Eish Zrei Holo. Take the fire pans which have been sanctified, but throw out the fire. This is replete with symbolism. Symbolism is very insignificant. And here, I'm going to use a piece from the Shemesh Shmuel Sokhachov, who is most concerned with people's motivations. His primary interest in the narrative parts of the Torah is to look at motivation. He uses Midrashim to understand motivation. If you appreciate motivation, you get this story very easily. He said, this story is key to understanding the whole Korach Yichus business. What we're saying here is there is something intrinsically right about Korach's Midas, but it's the way in which they were used that were wrong. Now think about it. The fire pan is retained, but the fire is removed. That means that the vehicle is appropriate, but the application is inappropriate. That's what this means. That's why the ois, the sign for all time, to remind the Jewish people of the Korach rebellion, will be to take what the way things should have been and use them for holy purposes. The way he puts it as follows. It is well known, and it's actually based on a medrash in the beginning of Parsha Truma, Zahav, Kesef and Uchoshes. They represent different midas. Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov, that one represents. Avo, one is Yiro, and so on. So, what does Nechoshes mean? This is something which he says in many places, not the only person who says it. Nechoshes represents Tokif Badatoi, to stand firm in one's views. And he says this is the Midah of Yaakov Avinu. Midah of Yaakov Avinu, he has all kinds of challenges to stand resolute and to stand firm. And in fact, you have this image in the Tochacha, when the heavens are unyielding, when the ground is unyielding, it's Mechoshes, or Barzel, but here Mechoshes. It means something unyielding. It stands, and it doesn't give. Vihine is the Sofashor, we're writing in Pashas, Korach, Tofresh, Ein Dalad. Adas Korach, Sherot to the Hakrif Nivei Hashem. They wanted to be those who brought the Ketores. It's very interesting imagery. It's Kodesh Kadoshim things. He wants to be the Kohen Gadol instead. That's the test. Who is the Kohen Gadol? It's exactly the hepuch, exactly the opposite of the middle of Aaron. Aaron is embarrassed to come forward. Pasha Shemini doesn't want the job, and he has to be persuaded. eventually he's dragged forward to be the Kohen Gadol. Here, they're pushing themselves forward. We want to do it. He's exactly the opposite of his middah. Who others upon him? Arrogance. When we call Mokum Sheba Kedusha, but nonetheless, when this middah is sanctified, it's used, directed in a holy way, he nami middah tovo. It's a good middah. How does this arrogance, right? How does arrogance manifest itself in a positive way? Because after the odd kanomer, you have to be able to stand firm. Arrogance in Kedusha, this is the way he writes about things, take that middle of arrogance and use it properly, then you have to stand firm. You stand up for what you believe in. You don't give in just because other people don't like it. You don't just yield. You don't play to the gallery, as they call it. It's in fact, he said, it's the most important of the middles. He says, well, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Yaakov is the founder of the Jewish people. It's middles Yaakov. He said, but it has to be used properly. It has to be weighed carefully. Because while it can be the best of the middahs, it also can be the most destructive of the middahs, because you don't listen any to anyone, you're not subject to any kind of controls, and as he says here, if it's misused, it can become azus ponim legehinum. It can lead you down the road of complete destruction. So he says, now you can understand. Yaakov exemplifies this middah. This is a middah which is passed on to all his descendants, and he sees it most manifest in the descendants of Levi. That's their job. Shimon and Levi sees it together, but Levi is the person and the family who has a beautiful essay of Yaakov Kamenetsky, which is well known, about why it is that Levim, having been the destroyers of Shechem, why is it they're going to be the teachers? Because they've got that sense of passion, that mission, that they didn't just stand firm, which is the attribute that teachers require, as long as it's channeled correctly. So, Ika HaMiddah, Liyosh Lot Achra Voida Baruach Oz, the main Middah, to really run after what you believe in, and to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu with this strength and this unyielding dedication. This is Mimidosu Shel Yaakov, this is one of the Middahs of Yaakov, the Yerushal Yisrael Mimenu, and it is the inheritance of the Jewish people from Yaakov to the Jewish people. So, what has he said here? First of all, the fire pans, will go backwards. The fire pans say the following, that the middah which Korach took is a good middah. It's an essential middah. In fact, it's focal to the avodah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so much so that we'll take the middah, which is of course the keli, that's the fire pan, and we're going to put it on the mizbeach to indicate for all time that this attribute is good, but as long as it's used for kedusha within the framework of avodah, then it's right. It's the way it was used. Therefore, Eish Zrei Holo. Throw out the way they used it. Chuck that away. That was wrong. But the middah itself is good. Don't think that this attribute is negative, it's positive. Or at least it's power, it's just a question of how you use it. That's the meaning of using the fire pan as a sign on the Mizbeach, the locus of spiritual activity, for all time. That's the answer to the second question. And what does that say about the first question? What we're saying is that Yaakov Avinu has this middah. This is his contribution to the Jewish people. One can use a deeper study and see how it is really a kind of mixture of the middahs of Avram and Yitzhak and becomes the founding attribute of the Jewish people. He gives it as a Yerusha to the whole Jewish people, and it finds its most concentrated manifestation in B'nai Levi. Yaakov looks forward and he sees Korach, and he says, "Oi, this is what happens when it goes wrong. This is a good middah which has been misused. I want history to know that this middah comes from me, but the misuse of it is nothing to do with me. It's not the middah itself. I've got no problem with that. Everyone knows that Levi is Ben Yaakov. There are no secrets. It's not a cover up. Because anyway, we know that Levi is Ben Yaakov. What Yaakov is saying, and this is perhaps based on the Maharal, but a more advanced understanding of the Medrash Tanchuma, is that Yaakov's tefillah is almost a plea, Kodesh Baruch Hu, please reassure me that although I give this very powerful middah, I know how to use it properly. From where do we see the beginnings of the possibility of misusing it in Levi? You say we see that in Levi. The trace of that begins only with Levi, with the episode of Shechem. And that's why it's in the context, Yaakov's brocha and his
plea to our Kodesh Baruch Hu within the context of referring to the events of Shechem. When we talk about that, because he's talking to them, not in the way he talks with other sons, he puts Shimon and Levi together, which is of course to do with Shechem. So in conclusion, the middah of Yaakov Avinu is a powerful, essential middah. It finds its root with Yaakov, and he acknowledges that. His tefillah is that the ability to misuse it should not be associated with him, only to find its initial trace in Levi, and is manifest in the most destructive form in Korach. That's the meaning of the Yichus al Aduchan, which is no problem. I don't mind being associated with Korach in that sense. When it comes to the rebellion, the roots of rebellion find their stopping point with Levi, although the middah which enabled him to rebel, which is inherently positive, that can of course be misused, begins with Yaakov. Have a good day.